Hello, everyone. This is Susie Ward welcoming you to what is a very special Matthew and Friends program. Tomorrow, the 17th, is the 28th anniversary of Matthew's transition into spirit life. On this very day, 26 years ago, I was having a very, very difficult time. And then I received a call from the dear woman who occasionally gave me messages from Matthew. He would contact her and ask her to tell me certain things. That day, he asked her to tell me not to think of April 17th as the anniversary of his death, but as his heavenly birthday. And he wanted me to celebrate that special occasion with him. He wanted me to buy flowers. Matthew and I both love flowers, and we had planted them together when he was little. And he wanted me to know that he would be at my side when I was choosing which flowers to buy. I'm mentioning this because Matthew's perspective on that day was very comforting for me. And I hope that this suggestion will help everyone else who feels great sadness on those kinds of anniversaries. Now, on with today's program. I always talk with Matthew about the kind of information he feels is important to share, and we talk about who to invite. Because this show is so close to our birthday celebration tomorrow, he wanted me to invite someone with whom he has shared several lifetimes, and he says that I have too. I don't have any conscious memory of any life except this one. But maybe what Matthew said explains why I have loved and admired Ifty from the very first time we met exactly 2 years ago. It seems as if I've known him forever. Ifty is really Iftikhar Ahmed, but he is more familiarly known as Dr. Ifty. He's a physician whose medical training started overseas and continued with residency training at two prestigious academic centers in the States. Ifty practiced for 15 years at a well-known institution in the Midwest, where he achieved the rank of professor. During those years, he also published extensively and often spoke at national and international medical conferences. His knowledge of both Western medicine and Eastern healing techniques have led to his current interest in researching new approaches to maintaining good health and managing disease. Now, please call in during the show after you've had a chance to listen to Ifty for a while, and you may ask him any questions you'd like to. The numbers, the toll-free numbers for both calls in the U.S. and Canada are on your screen. And now, Ifty, hi there, dear.
Hi there. Hello, hello.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
I'm honored. Believe me, I thank you, Matthew, from the bottom of my heart. But I also want to extend this thank you to your program organizers and sponsors and to your audience for tuning in to listen to me. What I am going to talk about is about personal transformation and change, and I'm going to make the audience recognize that they basically control their biologic form. We're going to really focus on emotional body healing and how it plays out in health and disease, and hopefully as people listen to me, they'll go back and think about things if things aren't working well for them from a physical standpoint. Thank you for that gracious intro. It's been an interesting journey, in Western medicine here. Last year, as you know, I decided to quit academic Western medicine. I had published extensively and achieved the rank of full academic professor, but there was always something missing from what I was doing and what I really intuitively felt the desire and the need. Perhaps it was soul voice, you know, kind of nudging me. So with that, I took the intuitively bold step of leaving a very prestigious institution to pursue a career away from, not completely away from Western medicine. Right now what I am doing, I'm doing diagnostic work, but I do not practice therapeutic Western medicine. The hope and the idea is that at some point as I investigate further some of the concepts which people might find quite intriguing and forward-thinking, further within my own conscious mind, that I will perhaps be able to speak more at a national and international level to an audience that may seem to understand what I'm saying and may even be in a position to write a book. So hopefully the hope and the prayer is that I have time down the line that I am able to do this full-time. But right now I'm enjoying a comfortable balance of practicing Western medicine, but also spending some time investigating some of these concepts. I want to just state a disclaimer, just in case someone tunes in and says, well, you know, these opinions of yours, are they shared by your employer or your previous employers? And they're really not. You know, these are just my own viewpoints, and it's always wise to come out with a disclaimer, and I'm doing that. For your audience, you know, you really don't have to, for those who have tuned in, obviously, come with a certain perceptual reality, come with a certain understanding of how things are, and I'm sure they know of all of the aspects of change in Western medicine. You know, the desire for people to look to alternative therapies, particularly herbology, naturopathic techniques, Eastern practices. You know, all these techniques and these treatment modalities that are out there, people are seeking out for a reason. They're doing this because of the fact that in some way, shape, or form, they feel that traditional Western practices have failed them in providing health maintenance for them. So really what I'm going to talk about, as I said earlier on, is the crux of my talk really is about personal empowerment and change, about recognizing how your emotional body is so important in your physical form, your biologic form. The information, your audience might say, well, where do you come up with all of this? It's from a combination of things. Extensive research into published material. I will say my own intuitive higher self, higher guidance. We'll leave it at that. And I think the final validation for my own conscious integration of where I'm at and what I know comes through my own challenges with asthma. And as you know, Susie, I had some horrendous times with asthma not very long ago, but was able to overcome that in that now I am completely cured of asthma. I do not take any medicine whatsoever. I have not had an asthma attack for over a year and a half now. So things clearly changed, and I think a large part of it had to do with me healing my emotional body. I'm going to leave this at that, and when I talk about some of the intricacies of the or details of the emotional body, I will refer back to my own challenges with asthma in the latter part of this this presentation. So let's first begin and ask this cardinal question as to why I feel, or why perhaps the audience feels, that Western medicine has failed to get to the core of the issue. I would say that there are many reasons why this has occurred, and I'll just highlight some of the things that I think Western medicine has really failed to understand. It has failed to understand the true nature of all reality, and kind of appreciates physical reality with a very limited perspective a perspective that does not take into account the interconnectedness of all life and the multidimensional nature of all moments, whether they are individual or cumulative. That's a mouthful, isn't it?
But it's a good mouthful. Carry on, dear.
It is very intrusive. It's very invasive with an approach that I refer to as very downstream. It does not take into account for any upstream mechanism such as emotional self in the precipitation and perpetuation of disease. In most instances, the viewpoint is disease is the result of happenstance. In some situations, people implicate genetic and environmental factors, but the power of self, the power of understanding how disease really evolves, is completely lacking in Western medicine. Western medicine fails to understand the true nature of all physical reality, as I said earlier on. It fails to see that all matter, and as I will talk to you later, including flesh and body, has an electromagnetic imprint. Lastly, what I think, it kind of looks at disease in a very fixed Newtonian manner. What do I mean by that? It looks as a human body in the form of a giant machine. The analysis of this machine over the past century, with all the insights and all the breakthroughs in Western medicine that have occurred, are what I refer to as a reductionist perspective. I'll make you understand what I mean by that. If you look at the breakthroughs that have occurred over the past century in the discoveries, it's moved from dissecting the human body to come to recognize that the human body is composed of parts. And then we move from that concept to the understanding that parts are made up of organs. And then we devised techniques to look at organs, and we found out that organs were made up of tissue. And then we found out that tissue were made up of cells. And then we developed the electron microscope, and we looked through the cells, and we understood that, well, the cells had various parts, including the nucleus, which housed a material called the DNA. And now with genetic techniques, we understand that the physical aspect to us is clearly influenced by this material within the nucleus of our cells, and it is present in all cells. It is called DNA. So this is what I refer to as the reductionist approach. This is the reductionist model, moving from something very big and kind of dissecting it down to the point where it's very minute. And at this point, we're stuck at the fact that DNA regulates physical form. So hopefully your audience has understood what I'm trying to say here. And so the fact that DNA influences physical form, we now are starting to look at aberrant, unusual patterns in DNA and implicating them with disease. The pharmaceutical industry is targeting, cancer cells that have unusual patterns of DNA, and they're developing medications that are directed against unusual patterns of DNA. And I know for a fact that there are platforms that are being developed in the U.S. That will be marketed very soon that will target the molecular profiles of cancer cells rather than just using a cocktail of medications. So we're right now, no matter how forward-thinking your Western research is, we are stuck at the point of the DNA, that the DNA controls and influences physical form, our biologic form. Okay? So why do I think that Western medicine has failed to get it right? You need to look at another aspect of science that has a completely different view, that has, I would say, a more spiritual view about all reality, about all existence, and it is quantum physics. Quantum mechanics. It really addresses the question of what is physical reality. And by the way, I believe that quantum mechanics or quantum physics is the true bridge of bringing back spirituality into the fold of healthcare, into the fold of medicine. There is no separation between medicine and spirituality. They're the same thing. Quantum physics helps to bridge that gap. It helps to make us understand the divine triune of spirit, mind, and body. So it is the science that I believe is going, will in fact lead us to where we need to be. Now let's see what quantum mechanics has to say about matter, including DNA. You know, it recognizes that the fact that we are able to feel, smell, taste, perhaps maybe an illusionary perception, a perception based on our sense. Because if you look at DNA, it is truly not solid. It is made up of atoms, and within each atom, there are electrons. And when you look at electrons, electrons are negatively charged particles that revolve around a positive charged nucleus. The electron, for the most part, doesn't have form. It is an electromagnetic wave. In some situations, it can change the way it behaves and starts to move in the form of a particle. But for the most part, it is charged. So what I am trying to say here is that the beyond DNA, which we in Western medicine think of in the form of a solid construct, there is a subatomic construct that does not have any form. It is pure electromagnetic charge. So our entire physical system, if you will, right from the cell to the tissue, to the organ, to the various parts of our body, may appear to have physical form, but it is a complex array of electromagnetic waves. Isn't that fascinating?
It's sort of over my head. I'm trying to assimilate it all.
Well,
but what I know, you've said a couple of things, Sifty, if I may mention these. At the very beginning, you said you have achieved a balance between what you have learned, what you have experienced, you know, beyond your academic training and beyond your practice. And intuitively, you have achieved a balance. And Matthew has talked about balance for all the 14 years that he and I have talked. The other thing is when you said that quantum physics is the bridge between today's science and spirit, that there is no difference. And, you know, I said the very same thing at a conference last summer that was Science, Spirit, and World Transformation. So I was so delighted to hear you say that.
Oh, it's Susie, it is the fact. You know, David Baum was a nuclear physicist well known, and he wrote this book that I think is a monumental book called Wholeness and the Implicate Order. And in this book, he asserted that our present-day tangible reality is really a kind of illusion, like a holographic image. In fact, the entire universe, he concedes in this book, functions on the principle of holography. So underlying our perceptions of reality, according to him, there's a deeper order of existence, a deeper order to all life that gives birth to all objects and appearances in our physical world. In many ways that a piece of holographic films gives birth to a hologram. And this deeper sense of reality he refers to that's hidden as the implicate order, and what we see as our physical reality in this worldly construct is the unfolded or explicate order. And according to him, the universal flow of energy is from the hidden to the unfolded, to the hidden to the unfolded. In other words, energy is in motion. It never dissipates. We never die. We're always in motion. We may manifest in the physical world, but we will move back into the implicate world. And I think this is a fascinating viewpoint that I know a lot of quantum physicists hold on to. So really, I think when you start looking beyond, Earth-based paradigms, Earth-based reality, you begin to understand from a higher perspective that there has to be a hidden order, that there has to be an implicate, interconnected order to all life. Now, what I'm going to do now here is I want to, the essence of the first, this part of the talk was to make people recognize that what they believe is solid form is not solid. And that's easy to understand. That it is all charge. So what you might feel, is human form is actually a constellation of waves. And that is really fascinating. What I want to do now is talk about how your emotions, your belief systems, influence your physical form, including your health and disease. And this is a segment where one can say that I'll be talking about the mind-body connection or the brain-cell connection. Okay. I'd written down some notes for your audience so that I would stay on track. Because
sometimes we weren't limited in time.
I know.
I always
recognize that, Susie. You know, especially with Western medical speaking, that there's a certain amount of time, and you want to get it to what you really want your audience to get to in that amount of time. And hopefully, I'll be cognizant of that. Now. One of the points I want to, and this is the hardest thing for me, there was a time for me to understand that most disease in our dimensional reality is in fact, created, formed from conflict. There's some disease that is part of soul contract, but most disease in lower dimensional realities is in fact created. And before I talk about emotional triggers and emotional body states and emotional body healing, and lead you into this realm, this hidden realm of a science called biogenealogy, I want to make you and your audience aware of two facts. Okay, one that we have come to understand and demonstrate to the works of many scientists, and one of them in particular that I am very fond of is Candace Burton, a book, Molecules of Emotion, that there are specific thought patterns that activate specific areas of the brain which lead to a very specific chemical response in our brain that then influences specific organs. So what this all means is that the way you think has been shown to influence your biologic form. The way you think activates specific parts of your brain, which then influences specific organ sites. And this link has been clearly shown by scientific Western-based, if you will, techniques. So this is called a mind-body connection. Okay. The second fact that I want your audience to once again hold and reaffirm that, yes, DNA is an electromagnetic, it's electromagnetic, it's a constellation of waves, it is responsible for your physical form, but it is also, what I want to emphasize, it's a living library that stores all your experiences and the experiences of your lineage before you. And this is referred to as cellular memory. So in other words, within DNA, not only is the blueprint for your physical form, but you can say that the entire human experience, the cosmic experience is hidden. It's in your DNA. We all have the codes to unravel, to manifest if we begin to heal ourselves emotionally. Now, these two important facts clearly need to be understood. I'm now going to move and talk about how emotional triggers precipitate disease. First, let's talk about how, what is disease? What is illness? You know, illness is seen not only by multicellular complex organisms, but also unicellular organisms. It's some sort of an adaptive response to an alteration in the environment of an organism, whether unicellular or more complex like the human body. At some point, illness is reversible, and this reversibility is innate and is a part of our genetic heritage. When and if your environment is allowed, an altered environment is allowed to persist beyond being reconciled or controlled, There is a time frame in which irreversibility sets in, ultimately leading the organism to respond in a way where functions will be altered, disease will develop, and the ultimately perhaps death of the organism will occur. Within the context of the human experience, I think most illness, as I said earlier on, is a response to a trigger, typically an emotional conflict. Now, I'll get into this a little more. If you have emotional conflict, it triggers specific genes in your DNA, which then lead to disease within specific organ sites. And people will understand this a little bit as I start talking about programming conflict and all that. Just remember that the way you think, the emotional conflict will influence specific areas of your DNA, which will then influence specific organ sites. So this pattern of gene activation to emotional triggers, interestingly, is conditioned within lineages, within family traits, through the mechanism of what is called cellular conditioning. What does this mean? It means that specific sets of emotional triggers activate the same DNA areas, gene areas, within certain lineages. That is why there are certain diseases that appear to be more frequently observed in some families, in some lineages, through the process of cellular conditioning. And the classic example of this is the association in women of breast cancer and the disruption of what is referred to as the nest phenomena. And I'll give you some conflicts later on, what I call programming conflicts, and I'll give you some examples of those. But let's go back to this issue of disruption of the breast, the nest phenomena leading to breast cancer. So when you have a trigger, if you will, it can be created by you, or it can be within your gene from your ancestry, and it has come into you through your family genetic code. Some genealogists refer to this as biologic decoding. With this construct, it is important to understand that even though an individual has an emotional insult, not necessarily a disease is going to develop. You need to have a seed of conflict within either the individual or within the individual's ancestry already put in there. And if the emotional triggers are recurrent that bring this conflict to the surface and are not resolved, this will eventually lead to disease of a specific organ site. This is called what I refer to as programming conflict. And I'll give you some examples of programming conflict. For instance, a good example is, as I said about the breast phenomenon, you know, with the disruption of the nest. And one can see that the breast is metaphysically regarded as the organ of nurturing, if you will. So if you had, for instance, a conflict from loss of a loved one, death of a loved one, disruption of a relationship, and these emotional conflicts were recurrent, and the programming conflict was within your genetic lineage, and if you did not resolve this emotional conflict within your life, and it was in your lineage, most likely you're going to develop initially activation of the breast, which is called hyperplasia of the breast. Once again, remember, it's irreversible initially, but as the conflict continues to fester and continues to fester, the same genes are activated, and eventually disease will develop. So with this in mind, it is so important for us to know that programming conflicts can be created by us in our lifetime that we can pass on to our offsprings, or it can be a part of our ancestral lineage. And so you can see, Susie, that, you know, we live in a reality of dogma. what I refer to as conditioned human experience, whether it's social, cultural, or whether it's from other organized whatever, you create seeds of conflict. You create an environment which is very conducive, fertile ground on which emotional disability can occur. I think humans, by moving away from their instinctive beliefs, intuitive knowing, have created a fertile ground for duality of existence and creating conflicts and illness and disease. Now, let me tell you what are some programming conflicts, okay? What are some programming conflicts? Well, unable to accept, for instance, or digest a situation, an event, has been linked in certain lineages, in certain families, to diseases of the stomach. Conflicts pertaining to an individual's boundary, individual's territory, has in some families led to bladder problems. Conflicts with forgiveness has led in some families to colonic issues. Conflicts with the nest, disruption of the nest, in some lineages has led to breast problems, including breast cancer. Conflicts with the fear of not having enough in some families has led to liver problems. Fear of dying to lung problems. Concerns regarding procreation, progeny to organs of the female and male reproductive system, concerns regarding self-value and exploration to, in some families, to structuring organs, for instance, bones and tendons and muscle and connective tissue. So these programming conflicts are there. It is for you to recognize within your lineage that these programming conflicts are there. And if you go back and consciously look at this and see what emotional triggers in your life seem to bring certain aspects of disease, you might find a link there. You might find that this makes sense of what I'm saying. I'll let you jump in.
Oh, I'm sorry, dear. May I interject something?
Please.
Okay. What I think is so important in what you're saying here is that we do, even though genetically we inherit the programming, we don't have to build on it.
No.
That our thoughts, our beliefs, can change that. Each of us has that power to change it. We don't have to carry on the family heart disease or cancer or whatever it may be. In a much earlier chapter of my life, I carpooled with someone who talked incessantly about how her mother had died of breast cancer, and she just knew that she was going to do it too. Well, we did lose contact. I know that she did develop breast cancer, but because we lost contact, I don't know if she died. That was what she had programmed for herself, but I don't know if she was able to get out of it.
You know, and she may in fact have had a programming conflict within her lineage for breast cancer, and if those emotional triggers kept coming on and, you know, without being resolved, without being worked on,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Well, she was afraid.
It would have led to activation of a breast,
mm-hmm.
breast, you know, hyperplasia, dysplasia, which is a precursor state, and eventually to cancer of the breast. I think this is a part of science that is quite out there. It's beyond the boundaries of Western medicine, and I think this aspect that you create your physical form, your biologic form, that your physical and biologic destiny is yours alone, and it is the way you think that will determine the way you feel and function. I think this aspect will hopefully be recognized and will become a part of our day-to-day health maintenance, management, and taking care of patients with disease. For myself, I'll tell you I had a horrendous time with asthma. In fact, there were 2 years back to back where I had influenza, cultured influenza, and I was so deadly sick. I had, I was on all the types of medications that you can imagine. But once again, there were other members in my family too that have asthma. There was a seed of already within the lineage. I recognize that. There was a programming conflict. And the emotional trigger of not having enough, if you will, or the fear of not being good enough, was a trigger that I think surfaced extensively in my career in academics, despite that I achieved great national and international acclaim. Within my heart, within my soul, I was being, I wouldn't say within my soul, within my conscious self, I was recognizing, or at least, playing with the thought that I wasn't good enough, It was a constant trigger for me. And as I attained balance, as I consciously recognized that this is what was leading to me having asthmatic attacks, I began to heal myself. There were a lot of alternative remedies that helped. And the key is for people that are listening in, sometimes people walk away and think that these alternative remedies will completely take care of your biologic form and bring you back to where you should be. They are. They help. They help bring back your vibrational status. They help rejuvenate specific parts of your body. But ultimately, for you to hold that form, if you will, you're going to have to resolve whatever conflict you have within you. That is the key, that to attain balance means to heal yourself emotionally. And as you do, your biologic form will be your destiny. It'll be totally in your control.
That, I think that is so empowering, to know that we do have that control. I've been told, and I think that there are a lot of others who now do probably believe that we choose our parents. And obviously, when we do that, we know everything that we're going to be inheriting, genetically.
Yes.
And so we willingly take on that cellular memory that has family disease.
Yes.
And maybe we do it as a goal to not follow in that footstep.
So true, Susie. This
because now with this much, much higher consciousness that's prevailing in the higher energies, we can look at it that way. We can change our convictions that, okay, this is the family disease. I've got to go along with it. And so we can stop having those convictions. We can stop having the fear that that is our fate. And we can do something about it.
Very true, Susie. This is the question that I ask myself, at soul level, why do you choose a specific lineage? Well, at soul level, you want to master certain aspects of the emotional tapestry of human existence. And so you choose a specific lineage, perhaps that has these triggers. And I think the key is to master the emotional tapestry of human existence, but to not structure your belief systems based on that, to master the duality or polarity, if you will, in human consciousness. And there are various aspects of human consciousness, and to make sure that you maintain a good balance. You're right there in the center, and you don't structure your belief systems on that. And as you do so, these triggers just sort of wash away. You grow as a human being, as a spiritual being, and perhaps as you do so, there is no polarity of consciousness, that the male and female forces merge, and, you know, what many would say, that the kundalini energy rises, the goddess energy rises, that all higher form becomes open to you, you become an interdimensional, multidimensional being. I think it's in our polarity of appreciation, if you will, of physical existence in third dimension that we must master and get past. You know.
I think that what you are doing by moving out of established medicine, not that you were ever wholly in it, for heaven's sake, but you understand that the research that you are doing now, you already have the intuitiveness that there is no separation between the science of medicine and spirituality. But to convince others that there is no separation. What you are doing now in the nature of research, and fortunately there are some others who are joining you, this bridge must be built.
It is, and you know the challenge
there
is.
There is the understanding. I mean, it's good to take things on faith, but I think that a lot of us appreciate having the bridge there, and that's what you are doing.
You know, there isn't a scientific model that someone would come to me and say, listen, you know, cause and effect, and, you know, here's a scientific model, you know, here's a way of methodology of testing, and we can prove what you're trying to say. There isn't one. Intuitive knowing, my own personal battle, what's been published, what others are also intuitively feeling, is really the key here, and perhaps there will be a scientific model that would evolve with these concepts. I think the key is for people to walk away and recognize that they are the holders of their own biologic form, that their biologic form is theirs, and they can do whatever they please with it. It's about free will, and it extends to your biologic form too, you know.
Oh, indeed.
So you are in charge of it, so do something about it. Yeah.
Well, if the, you know, from my perspective of knowing, you know, not a whit of what you know scientifically, but I'm feeling encouraged by some of the things that Western medicine, not as a whole certainly, but some of the things that have developed, like animal therapy in hospitals and convalescent centers, the importance of music in healing, I'm sure this is still limited, but some hospitals are actually developing departments that have acupuncture as an option. I see this as encouraging, and maybe even that there's now recognition of the post-traumatic syndrome that is affecting the troops who are returning from battle, from
yeah.
combat.
Yep.
But what is your feeling about this?
You know, Susie, that's a very poignant question, and as we delve into this, I want to tell you a little bit about an organization that has done some very interesting work. I became aware of them about a couple of years ago. They're called the Heart Math Institute, and they're basically an organization, a nonprofit organization, that is studying the effects of emotions on neurocognitive function. And what they are really doing is studying the heart-brain connection. And it's interesting because the indigenous tribes have always believed that one thinks with one's heart, not with one's brain. Now, at the Heart Math Institute, they've actually shown that the heart actually has a collection of neurons or ganglia within it, that it has a mini brain within it, and it pulses the brain, the human brain, periodically. They have shown with their research that when you hold positive thought processes or positive emotions, that your heart rhythms are more harmonious and that your brain functions in a more harmonious way. In contrast, when you become erratic with your thought patterns, your heart rhythms become erratic, and so does appear to be disharmony within the function of the CNS. So, I mean, I think this is some really interesting research that's coming out saying that, you know what, as you live in your heart, if you will, in a loving, lighted, harmonious manner, your brain was going to function in a harmonious manner. And guess what? Already we've shown that the brain pulses the cells, and your cells are going to function in a harmonious manner. So really, if you look at it, there is a heart-brain-cell connection. I think harmony within oneself, emotional balance, to me, is key. And I think this, some of this work that's coming out of HeartMath is very promising in validating that viewpoint.
Well, that's even more encouraging than some of those things that I mentioned. And I just want to say this. As you were talking about the heart having its own brain, I was thinking of something that you know, and I have also mentioned this on the show, that Celeste and David and I received messages for a book called And Then God Said, Then I Said, Then He Said. And in that, one of the things that God told me is your heart is the seat of your soul. So, there you certainly have some supportiveness for.
Well, you know, away from I've always, in recent times, for sure, I realize that the way to higher thought is through one's sacred heart. I think the key is your sacred heart. Living in a field of justice, never creating outside of this field, creating harmony within one's life and those around, actually within one's life is the key. Once again, Susie, I want to emphasize to your audience, your biologic form is your own destiny, your own inheritance. You control it, you know. Start believing it. Start taking care of any emotional baggage you have, especially if you see, thought patterns that connect and you can consciously appreciate is causing disharmony in your life and is producing physical ailment. Conquer that. That's what you're here for as a spiritual being, to experience the emotional tapestry but not get hooked by it, not have your belief system structured by extremes of emotion.
No, I'm going to have to take a moment break just to mention the guest on my next show, and then you have said so many important things. Can you pull them all together in about 2 minutes?
Sure, I can. I'll let you.
Perfect.
Go ahead.
Give me 1 moment then to break. Okay, 4 weeks from today, on May 14th, Roger Frampton will be my guest. And we will be talking about the world of our future. Like Ifti is a visionary in his field, Roger is a different sort of visionary with a positive outlook on the changes that are leading us to Earth's golden age. He co-hosts a weekly radio show that reaches the metropolitan area of Ottawa, Canada, and he presents seminars and publishes a super website, 2012chronicles.com. iftikar.com. Okay, Ifti, back to you, dear.
All right, so if I was to summate everything I said today, I would say, number one, I'd say to the audience, your human form or physical form is physical in some ways, but also recognize has an electromagnetic form, charge, if you will, okay? The DNA, and this form also includes your DNA, okay? The essence of your physical reality, if you will. The next thing I would want to emphasize is that illness or disease is the result of recurring emotional trauma or triggers for most of disease patterns in third dimension. There are very few diseases that are part of soul contract. These emotional triggers activate, at least in some families, conflicts that have been already inherited within your DNA. And if you are unable to take care of these emotional conflicts, specific types of diseases will manifest. Lastly, I would say that to overcome the physical challenges of disease, one needs to overcome one's emotional conflict. One needs to recognize that the human experience is a myriad experience full of emotional polarities, and one needs to live life mastering those polarities and not creating belief systems based on them, so that one will not create emotional conflict and hopefully not create disease.
Would you like to mention something about the part that fear plays in creating stress that manifests as disease in our most vulnerable parts, physical parts, because that is the genetic influence there?
Perhaps, yes, it truly does. Clearly, you know, fear disrupts the heart-based rhythm. It produces disharmony within the nervous system. It influences multiple organ sites. So, yes, there are, you know, if you had to analyze fear, fear could be to a variety of issues, a variety of programming conflicts. Fear to accept a situation, fear to digest a certain situation, fear of loss of the nest phenomena, of you know, fear of not having. These programming conflicts are various aspects of fear. They are not love-based emotions that affect various organ sites, as I talked on. So fear is the key here, you know. Overcome that, and you shall overcome whatever the physical constraints that you are facing.
I like it that you said love is the key. It really is the key to everything, isn't it?
It surely is.
Ifti, yeah. Dear, thank you so, so much for joining us today. I know you took time out of your very, very busy work to do this. You cleared your desk, you closed your door so that you could join us today. Thank you. You know I love you. Please come back to visit whenever you can.
Listen, I want to thank once again you, Matthew, your sponsors, and your beloved audience for tuning in. God bless.
And blessings to all, and love and peace to all from Matthew and me. So, goodbye now.
Bye-bye.